How am I? Am I centered in the frame?
Yeah, you look pretty centered.
Great. Am I aligned? Do I feel aligned, Scott?
I don't know if you. I don't know how you feel, man. Do you need to feel more aligned?
Welcome, everyone, to the Sovereign States of Mind podcast. This, I don't know which episode it's going to be, around 20, maybe 22. Scott was the very first guest. Episode number one. Check it out. It's called something like Storytelling, Moralities, and Boundaries, and The Dance with Authenticity, something like that. Some really nice title that an AI came up with after reading through the transcript of our conversation. And all of sovereignstatesofmind.com has really nice in-depth articles about every episode. And you can go check it out. We're turning it into a total search engine optimized blog full of this, like a database of different personal sovereignty topics. Mm-hmm. So we have a pretty exciting title today. It's called The Lessons Learned from the Garden. I like to call it Transcendental Lessons after hearing the topics that Scott has provided for this conversation. It's a bit trippy just looking at the outline. This is, we're talking about space, time, the individual, biological ecology, non-biological ecology, well, just ecology. Those are those are in the same. And the ethereal. Mm-hmm. Why don't you explain where this all comes from?
In permaculture teaching, Bill Mollison says, you know, the reason that we leave zone five is because nature is the great teacher. And that's where we learn all our lessons from. And that's where all of the reserves are.
What is zone five?
Okay. So in our zoning, it's about use of the land and how much we interact with it. And what it really refers to is where we put our energies, our human energies. So zone one would be the closest to the house. Zone zero is either yourself or inside your house. And then zone two is the next step out outside of that. And this is, these are design ideas for how we can decide which elements to put in which place based on how much intensive use they have and how much intensive care they take. Okay. So with that in mind, you know, we have to remember that nature is still a thing. We don't want to displace that entirely with our human footprint. The reason being because nature provides us all the services that give us life on this planet. I feel like there should be little hors d'oeuvres on here. Sorry. I'm just getting used to that whole part there.
Yeah, yeah, it's all good. So we have these human goals that we slap on top of nature. Mm-hmm. And
oftentimes we don't listen to nature. And the idea behind regenerative design is that nature is the great teacher. We listen to nature because nature is going to tell us all the lessons. One of the permaculture principles is allowing your system to dictate its own evolution. And what that really means is that nature has this really deep wisdom, and it's already figured things out. Like, we have great human engineers, we have AI engineers, but everything is within the parameters of Earth and life, right? And nature's already figured out how to engineer things perfectly and keep them in tune through time. You know, that's why evolution of species happens. That's why every next generation is slightly different than the last one, because it's a tuning.
It's interesting. I was just tweeting to someone about it today in my morning marketing session, how, because someone was saying, where would you be right now if you were, if you, all your goals were met, you're successful and following, like, you know, and you're thriving. Mm. You're like, it'd be exactly where I am now. Like, everything starts with your physicality. Everything starts with nature, mm-hmm. and our body being a part of nature. So you can, like you said, AI engineers, all this other stuff, it all starts with actual physical nature.
Actual physical nature. Yeah. And as a land worker, our job is to tune with that nature. It isn't necessarily to just say, nature, get out of the way, I'm going to do my thing. Because you can't. I mean, you're dependent on the rain. You're dependent on the sun. You're dependent on the animals behaving, you know, you're dependent on the, you know, whatever sort of bloom of some sort of insect pest you might have, or good insect you might have, you know. And even conventional farming just reacts to those sort of things, right? It's just like, I'm going to spray the heck out of it, whatever. And it keeps trying to crunch the natural system into its own box. But you can only do that for so long before nature rebels, before nature isn't able to sustain that, because you're not tuned to the actuality of nature. So this whole thing about life lessons coming from the garden comes from that sort of thinking. And to me, I think these are applicable pretty much to anything. that you do in this life. Because again, I said the nature is the great teacher. The garden is where we go to interact with nature and learn all those lessons. And if you pay attention, they reveal themselves.
Mm. Mm. So these five transcendental lessons you learned from the garden, this comes from your just background and experience in history with mm-hmm. working with the land, like all the time. How many years have you been living this way?
Well, I mean, I've been a land worker since I was a kid, really. I mean, we were paid to mow lawns and trim trees mm-hmm. and haul material. And I remember I got paid when I was a kid to take care of my friend's dad's pigeon flock, you know? So I was tending pigeons in the summer times when they go away on vacation. So, I mean, I think I was 11, 12 years old doing that, you know, and now I'm 47 and, I transitioned through some other things, you know, looked at cooking as a career, and that's part of still what I do, because I think that's one of those other ways that we can connect. You know, I think it's a direct connection from nature to human beings that allows mm-hmm. a direct connection between the human beings in that moment that are either preparing the food together or enjoying the food together. Mm-hmm. So then I think I had my background last time in there, but I was a wildland firefighter for about 10 years doing land management work, various things.
Different relationship with nature.
Different relationship with nature. And also one of the last crews I was on was a fire use module. And this kind of just changed my paradigm, my personal perspective on what we're doing. And so the fire use module, their job is to monitor and slowly kind of sometimes corral fires, but really mostly to allow the fires to burn in places where resources are scarce and the management plan allows for it. So that's usually wilderness areas and national parks. Specifically, we did a lot of work in Yosemite, and we also did a lot of work in the Grand Canyon. And the Grand Canyon and Yosemite are probably two of the most progressive and amazing fire land management programs in the world, because they've been able to put the resources to it and learn the old lessons. And so both of those places apply a lot of fire, and the human element doesn't take precedence in those places necessarily. It does in protecting those human zones, but of course, you know, it's supposed to be a natural area. So as much as they can allow that to happen. And what you see in these areas, what I saw after being a fire effects monitor for three long seasons, beautiful seasons, just out in the mountains, watching fire burn, watching nature come back into places where fire had burned, learning those lessons. I saw that what we have been doing with firefighting, it's exacerbating the problem, right? In a lot of ways. I mean, I was looking at it kind of from a climatological perspective, because everything in the training back then was like, it's going to get worse. Look, you know, and this is, I retired 15 years ago. I didn't retire. I quit. I decided on a new career. But that message just, it had been going on for, you know, 10 years of my fire training. This is just going to get worse because climate change and the way we've been managing forests, they're going to go hand in hand to create worse and worse problems.
Right. And I feel like it's a similar concept with like Lahaina and the fires mm-hmm, in Maui. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is it used to be a lush, verdant, like mm-hmm. tons of water. Mm-hmm. And then they redirected the water to like the plantations mm-hmm. and the road resorts and all the money. And now it's so dry that it.
Yeah. And then we have this other thing that happens, just like it's happened in California many, many times, is you have private utility companies that are looking at the bottom line and they're just gambling with their infrastructure. And I'm not one who buys into the direct energy thing. I'm just going to go right out there and say it. As my fire background, I'm going to tell you, instead of investing in billions of dollars in satellites to shoot frickin' fire everywhere, it's way easier to wait for there to be fire or fire weather predicted and pay three homeless people to go out and light some shit on fire. Way easier.
Are you suggesting that's what happened instead of?
I mean, if there's going to be what I'm just saying is like
have a logical conspiracy.
My logical conspiracy just brings me to like, I could have lit that fire with seeing the wind, with the dryness, that wind coming over the mountains, it dries the air. It sucks every bit of moisture out of that air because it comes out of the over the mountains and it expands. And as air expands, it sucks up moisture. And that's what happens in California all the time. So that's the Santa Ana winds. That's the north winds. So I get a little fired up about this.
I know.
I'm a little fired up about it.
Just louder. I'm going to move the mic back.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting topic, but I just brought it up so because it's the way we work with nature. We think our human footprint takes precedent.
We don't think about it like that.
Yeah. We just think that we take precedent. This is the video we made like six years ago. It's about cycles, the cycles of nature. We think we don't need to follow them in our systems, but really there's no fighting that.
Right. Because nature is the absolute. This, you know, exactly what we were saying earlier in this conversation.
And I think that's the important thing to recognize about climate change. Yeah. Like nature has shifts in cycles, and that's just how it works. And it's not to say we're not exacerbating it, but I don't think it's as serious as the media hypes it out to be. But like nature is shifting. The climate just shifts.
We need to have another episode on that. And you and I should just discuss that in a whole other episode.
Because sure.
I do have a nonprofit that's based around that. And I have a lot of thoughts around that. But I agree with you.
I would be curious to hear your main thesis.
I think bringing it back to what you're saying, though, is we are a part of nature.
That's the biggest part.
You know, and we're displacing nature in so many different ways. And we've taken over so much of this planet with our human footprint, whether it's through forest management, lack of forest management, mowing down the Amazon rainforest.
Just the resources we need for our civilization to continue the way it does.
Yeah, exactly.
This is crazy. You see the amount of cars out there and the amount of oil and gas necessary to power them all. It blows my mind. It blows my mind. And go to Asia or something.
Yeah. And my mind that like is absolutely sometimes like way too obsessive on little numbers. I notice every little drop of gas that comes out of the nozzle when I get done. And one day I sat there.
Think
of how many drops of gas fall on the ground every day from everybody's nozzle. And it's like millions of gallons just wasted right there. And it's like, that goes and has an effect on the planet, has effect on our health. You know, I mean, benzene coming off of that. Like, it's just, we have an effect. There's no doubt. And right now we have an outsized effect on this planet.
Well, and the best way to look at this effect is, like you said, the Amazon. Look at all the trees being cut down. So tell me that's not an effect. You know, don't talk about, oh, the ozone's going to disappear, all that stuff, whatever. But just look at the very immediate, the very immediate changes.
Yeah.
Like forests being cut down. I don't think you can really argue with that. There's nothing to really.
And if you look at the ecological history of the United States and you look at the story of the passenger pigeons, right?
Tell me about that.
Well, the pigeons used to completely black out the sky. And there was wild pigeons, flocks of them. And they were hunted into extinction. The human beings got rid of them. And not only hunted into extinction, their ecology was displaced. So they weren't able to be part of the ecology anymore. And it's sort of the same thing that's happened now. It is the same thing that's happening now with the monarch butterflies, you know? So, you know, directly in American ecological history and our disruption, the Midwest is the same sort of story as the Amazon, but in a different way, because there used to be vast grasslands with huge amounts of roots going under the ground that were tended by huge herds of animals and flocks of birds,
bison
and elk in place, like, you know.
Yeah.
In the Western Great Plains, there was pronghorn antelope. Just massive herds.
And this, you know, back in the day of, you know, settling the West, the settlers would essentially drove bison and all these animals out into extinction just to get the natives out. Just to get the Comanche and the Apaches out.
It was commercial interests that specifically paid for that to happen, the railroads.
Yeah. It's crazy.
You know? And this history is still happening.
All
over the world. Because what happens is commerce doesn't understand the ecological bank account.
It doesn't have the capacity to compute it. Commerce, right?
Right. I mean, it's not built into modern capitalism. You know, so I have this other theory that, you know, we're going aside, but it comes from these lessons from the garden, which is that every economical paradigm has to evolve. This paradigm we're in is based on whatever sciences emerged in the 1600s and the 1700s and the 1800s, trying to figure out what was happening. And it's like, oh, competition. Competition is the absolute.
That's how nature works.
That's how nature works. Yeah. But we know that's not the absolute. It's part of it. It's part of the balancing, the testing and everything. But there's a whole lot of symbiosis that happens as well. There's a whole lot of non-competition that happens.
I know.
Things just decide to not compete.
There's got to be a good analogy for it.
They find their niches.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, it's like, it's not like nature does give a fuck about you. Nature doesn't give a fuck you. But at the same time, it's super non-competitive out there when you do it the right way. Nature is very collaborative.
Yeah.
Nature will work with you. And so it's like the two sides of the same coin. It's like you look and look at it like survival of the fittest, like nature's out to get you. Everything's, you know, going to happen against mm-hmm. you. Or you look at it like, okay, well, I'm going to go with where the path of least resistance here. And I'm going to work with the elements around me. And I'm going to design the systems I need to thrive around those. And it's going to be more sustaining long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And it's going to allow for more human happiness, because the path we're on right now is more trauma.
It's dire.
It's pretty dire. It's pretty dire.
And we say we as the collective.
The collective. Yeah. The humans. Humans on this planet. This society is not going to be able to continue using the resources in the way that it is. And the reason that there's conflicts on the world level the way they are is because the international powers and the powers that be all understand that these resources are becoming scarce, and now's the time to make plays for them.
And that's what they're doing.
And that's what they're doing. When so, the other solution is that we try to figure out something in the human spirit that can be healed. And so that brings us back to
the individual. The garden. Can we start at the individual?
Woo, yeah.
Let's start at the individual, because this is where, this is why I focused all my brand messaging on personal sovereignty. On sovereignty is like, when, if the individual can start taking control back of their thoughts, of their actions, understanding responsibility, taking responsibility, when we make these changes on the societal level, that's when we'll see these grand changes. But it needs to start with the individual.
Yeah, that's where it starts. Absolutely, 100%, absolutely. So the individual has to want to play. You know, so you can't get somebody to do this without them wanting it. For me, I find deep inspiration in the peacefulness of the garden. I find really deep inspiration in the wholeness that I feel in being in the garden. And not just my individual wholeness, but the wholeness that I feel as a connected individual to nature and ecology. And then I also see that there's a deep responsibility in that. You know, if I choose to go this path, I have to care for the things that are there. Because they are me. They're that wholeness that is me. And I definitely have had some struggles lately actually getting myself in the garden, because my whole individual hasn't been as settled as I would want it to be. And that has a lot of layers with community, with looking at my climate grief, ecological grief. Yeah. So that's one of those lessons. It comes back to the individual and figuring out how to be willing to engage that. And it's the great healer for me. So I always go back to it. It's just how much energy I actually have. It's a question. But that's okay too. I was thinking about this on the way over. We don't let things fallow. I think we talked about this last time too, about naps and rest.
Rest.
We talked a lot about rest last time. And that rest is, when we're farming, it's fallowing. Right? We're letting the land rest. We're letting ourselves rest. And nature does that in a lot of different ways. Nature's not constantly producing. Even our fruit trees here don't constantly produce. They go through different cycles.
I don't know if this leads into space and maybe even time, but when it comes to rest, I find how busy I am lately in life and business and all the parenting, everything I'm doing. If I'm not creating space for proper rest, even if, you know, for regulation, sure, they're sleeping, but even beyond that, rest in the sense of regulation, like I'm not going to think right now. I'm just going to go to the beach. I'm going to just going to go enjoy 10 minutes of not thinking about something. Just if there's not that kind of space, there's no space to process what's happening. And so if I have mm-hmm. these really intense days or a really great podcast, a really great live stream, and someone came and played music, it was like a powerful show. And I'm like, whew, if I don't create space soon after, like by that night, mm-hmm. to really just like let it go wash through me, like what just happened, then it compounds, it adds up on my being, it starts to manifest as emotion that may not exactly have a source that makes sense to me. But it starts coming out in ways where it just feels heavier and heavier, even though everything I'm doing is what I love. Everything is all there. So when I think of space in the context of the individual, I think of there are different ways of approaching what space means for us, whether that's physical or space as like a container that we create.
Well, that would be time. That's the time space.
Is that the container, time?
Well, when you talk about the container and having time in your life to rest, enough time to get 8 hours of sleep, enough time to go meditate, enough time to go set foot barefoot in the garden and be there for an hour and clear your mind that way.
So we got physical space and time space.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're connected. Space-time is, you know, it's all one. However, but in our minds, we can see it as these two different elements that we're kind of playing with.
Yes.
You know, so it helps us make sense. So when I say space in this context, it would be just like your studio here.
Is a
space. And then if you wanted to add the time element into it, it would be time in your life and maybe even time in your family's life where your family wasn't here. You know, so then it allows you the rest period.
So how does this, how are space and time the lessons from the garden?
They're absolutes with the ecology. So
with the physicality also.
That's,
you have to have time. You have to have the space for it to grow.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. You have to have your own time to be able to interact with the garden, and you have to allow the garden to play out its own time frame.
Yeah.
You can only boost plants so hard.
Can only give so much fertilizer.
You can't grow tomatoes in Minnesota in the middle of winter without putting them inside a house.
Without cheating
and,
you know, using the grid's power.
Exactly.
For light.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, in a natural context, nature has some absolutes around time.
Yeah.
The lifetime of a specific plant. Harvesting. If you don't harvest what is good when it's good, it goes bad. This is the most amazing thing that relates to economy in my mind. Because a farmer's economy, his crop is not good until it's ready to go to market. Farmer's economy means that he has to find the time when that product is ripe enough that people want to buy it and not too ripe. And he has to figure out how to preserve that time as much as possible and extend that time frame and how to play with that. Another piece that comes in with this is when a farmer brings in a crop, a gardener brings in a crop, they actually have to have time in their life to do that. You can do all that work to garden. All that work to have a garden all summer. And at the end of the summer, you don't have time to bring it all in, to tend to those things, to preserve them. You lost all that energy. Or you put it out to a spiritual process.
Chalk that one up to my personal growth.
Right? But well, the personal growth will bring you back to the fact that you should have made time, or you shouldn't have done the garden.
Here's what I want to say about that. I love the forgiveness, though, that nature does offer. I mean, we're not growing any complex things here, but we do have things growing. And I see the tomatoes not doing well because I didn't do the work to keep them healthy. Right? That makes sense to me. Other things are all harvesting, though, in their own time, with enough leeway for us to like be able to go out there and grab. Everything else has just gone to, you know, like the energy, the space, the time has not been here with the kids and everything to really focus on the garden. We haven't been doing the work, but the way we try to design everything, and I don't want to call this permaculture, it was convenience, but just have everything growing, keep the weeds around it light, plant things in the chicken poop where the chicken coop was, and things are just happening. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole tomato plant growing over there that I haven't touched, but it's super healthy because it's where the chicken coop was. And the ones we have by the house in zone zero or whatever, zone one, that are supposed to be like the ones we come grab every meal, they're just dead. So there is some kind of forgiveness too with when you, I guess maybe that is kind of a system there as you're planting it in the chicken poop.
Yeah. I mean, it's not permaculture. That's a whole other top of what is permaculture.
Sure. But
you're using the path of least resistance, and you're understanding that you are designing.
And trying to collaborate.
Yeah. And you understand that the path of least resistance is where the easy things happen, where you're not going to have to do as much work in those places, and what the environment is willing to give, because nature wants to give.
And it's interesting too, because the stuff that doesn't work, I chalk that up to the spiritual growth. Like, okay, that's what it is. If it requires more work than that, then it wasn't meant to grow here. Yeah. And I wasn't meant to do it right now.
That's really been my philosophy for many, many years with when I'm growing stuff, you know, plant the things that want to grow. Don't struggle. Uh-huh. I mean, there's very few crops that are worth struggling for. There's some that are worth struggling
this
for
a little bit. This should be one of the lessons. Don't struggle. Or on this,
we'll go with the flow and allowing the system to dictate its own evolution. So this is kind of ecology. The ecology showing you the lesson, allowing the time, and then working with that, going with the flow.
This is a whole web here. They all interplay together.
Really? Yeah. Okay. So that brings us to this other thing. It's only the human mind that's wanting to separate all this stuff out, right? It's not separate, you know, but we can understand it better through our human lens by breaking things down. You know, it helps us understand things more clearly. And it's helping me understand these thoughts that I have through time more clearly, because this is something I've been wanting to write about for quite a while, you know, and I don't have the space and time necessarily to write this stuff down. That's a garden that I haven't planted necessarily. And this right now is maybe me exploring the idea of planting a proverbial garden.
Well, that sounds like a good opportunity to bring up my first ad read of the episode.
All right.
Tomorrow we're starting, but we have a new one starting in October. It's the Creator Sovereignty Cohort. This is my course I've been working on to support creators. I believe everyone's a creator, but in this sense, it's the people that are like working on a brand or whatever. Use your phone, Scott. Talk to it. Talk everything you're saying while you're there. Talk to your phone. There are tools now online, AIs, that can turn it into the book for you, or at least turn it into text and then a different AI to make it cleaner. You can write this book without the space and time. This has been my discovery lately. And like you still need to create time to just be present with
the
process.
You need less space and time though.
You need so much less. Mm-hmm. So these workflows for creating content are one of the types of things we do in our cohort. Check it out, creatorsovereignty.com. So that's my quick plug.
Rad.
But I think it's really important because as I was saying before we started, a content creation practice is kind of like yoga. It could be for your business. Your brand is your business. It could be just for your creativity. It could be for exploring ideas, for developing skill sets, whatever. You do it every day in some form, and you can translate that into value for people out there. Mm-hmm. And then you're getting that feedback from the external world, from other people, like, thank you for the value you're providing. Mm-hmm. And then that feels good. Mm-hmm. And you want to keep doing it, and you know you're providing value. So we have these opportunities now to write those books. Mm-hmm. And do it, man. Let me help you. We'll talk about
That brings me to the other piece. I think that we need community, and this is ecology, human ecology. You know, we need to be developing that human ecology where we have closer community so we can support each other in these things. So it's the idea of essentially where money comes from, right? Like, I could farm you this and give you this potato so you can eat, so you could do something else with your time and give that time value back to me. You know? That's Thanks. What we're talking yeah. about here, that exchange yeah. sort of thing that comes with community. And that's what ecology does. And that's what biological ecology does. And that's what non-biological. And I hate breaking it down because.
So what is non-biological ecology?
I'm kind of. Ideas. I buy into Gaia, the Gaia theory. So it's all alive, really. I think that all the rocks are alive and all these things. But for many humans.
Animist.
Want to think that we're. Yeah, I'm an animist. But I think there's a lot of people that, you know, want to discount that animism because you can't prove it with science that as it's been. So if we want to break
Tell
it down.
Tell me a
like
religion
that,
you can prove.
Yeah, yeah. and it's, we get to believe it however we want. I mean, science has gone in the direction of scientism. You know, there's
science. Religion. No, the science TM. Right, trademark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's, you know, like the belief in the absoluteness of science that we couldn't know anything else unless it's in that bubble of what's already known by science or can be known.
It's in the canon.
Immediate. Yeah. So we just got to discount it all, and that's dangerous. That's dangerous as all hell because it just pushes things forward with blinders on, as opposed to the whoa, there's a lot that we don't know.
And yeah,
the
any
humility
kind of
that comes with that.
Any kind of dogmatic,
right?
Yeah, fanaticism, I guess.
So
dangerous.
Anyway, to the animism of it all, I'm breaking it down with non-biological and biological because, you know, some people will say that the rain and the wind and the rocks are non-biological. The sun is non-biological. Okay. I don't actually believe that because I think the rain actually delivers nutrients. I know the rain has hydrogen peroxide in it that cleans the leaves of the plants. I know that the rain delivers microbes.
So that makes it biological in your worldview.
Yeah, that's why like I think it is. Yeah,
rays of
exactly, and like this life, the life can't exist without the sun. So like, it's just the human mind that wants to say there's a division between these things, right? Just like the force of gravity. You know, we want to think that that's, well, that's a physical thing. It's not a life thing. It's not an ecological thing, but it is. It's, you know, the plants grow in opposition to gravity or with gravity. They fall over with gravity. The roots grow in the direction they do because of gravity, the amount of gravity that exists. You know, everything's evolved to the gravity of this planet. It's evolved to the air pressure of this planet. And it's evolved to the winds and the rains of this planet. And it's evolved to the amount of sunlight that comes from that sun. So there's no real separation. I'm doing this for the sake of convenience for the human mind.
And just to, this is a, just to loop it back a little bit too, is like the blindness to that evolution is what's going to, I would say, kill off a large part of our civilization as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
Because those systems aren't going to work forever.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's like the blind, like, oh, I'm not choosing to look at how life works on this planet. I'm just going to do it my way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What 100%. Do you mean there's no air on Mars? I'm going to breathe it anyway.
You know, yeah. It's kind of like that. It really is. I think what's happened is with the, with the birth of science and then the continuation of science and scientism, it's created a lot of hubris in the way that humans go about things. And it's, again, going back to any dogmatic approach, there's hubris that comes from thinking you know. So when you go to the garden, that checks your hubris, right? You thought you knew you could plant that there. You thought you could grow that. No. You were wrong. It's an absolute. The nature and the garden is an absolute. When you go to interact with it, if you don't water your plants and it's dry, they're gonna die. You know, there's just some absolutes there, and it checks your hubris, but it also can give you a huge boost to that sense of self that isn't necessarily egoic, that doesn't have to like expand into others.
So it's a different form of that external feedback. Instead of coming from people, which I was saying from the content, this is coming from nature.
And I think,
wow,
it's
look
real.
At what's growing. Oh, of course, because you're eating it.
It doesn't lie. Well, it doesn't lie.
Can't hide from it.
Yeah. And humans don't even know themselves, but plants know themselves. They're going to show you all the signs of what's going on. The ecology is going to show you all the signs of what's going on.
Well, we also have neurological triggers that, like, it's healthy to look at your work when you're done in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
It's healthy to stand back and just look at it. Look at the transformation, the before and after. Your mind then registers, mm-hmm. you did that.
Yeah.
And that's the feedback that's required by your brain to feel fulfilled in these activities.
Yeah, I love that, because I take my crew at the end of every workday, and not only are we looking for tools we might have left out and things we can clean up, but I'm like, go and look at your good work. Take a walk around. We'll take 5 minutes at the end of the day and look at all the good stuff you did. See the progress that you did and how we've moved this forward, so we can feel connected to it, you know? And I think that that's one of those huge lessons coming back to that space and time in your life, being able to reflect. Have time to be able to reflect and learn all those lessons. That's it. You take it in at the end and you rest and you say, these are my good works, right? And I don't want to get too religious, but you know, there's a whole reason there's a Sabbath. And on the seventh day,
he rested.
They rested. I was going to say, but yeah, it was just because I have that.
On the seventh day, there was rest.
There was rest. Yeah. And that's why I'm going to put in my plug for my jam, which you should come to. You should still keep it
the
in your
Sunday's
mind.
The Sunday's
jam? Yeah.
Everyone's leaving. I'm going to be here alone for 2 weeks.
Are you
I can
here
totally
on
come.
Yeah. Oh, come. It's the birthday party jam.
Hell yeah.
We're going to rock.
I won't have my kids, but I'll be here.
Yeah. Yeah. We're rock on.
I'm going to miss them. I feel weird going to a party to celebrate without them.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, there's not as many little ones over
Is it
there.
Your birthday?
No. It's like three of our band members.
Sweet.
And they're two kids, Tony's kids are born within a couple of days of him. So, and we've kind of built up an orchestra, like not on Sunday, but last Monday we had like 10 people. And at one point in the jam, there was not a single guitar playing. There was three violins and a cello and a horn and an accordion and a banjo
So I'll bring all my instruments.
Yeah, bring a couple. Yeah,
sweet.
Yeah, figure out what we do is we just figure out where we fit in, and so that's one of those lessons from the garden.
Does this lead to ethereal? The reflection, the celebration, the
yeah, definitely. I could see that.
Also, kind of like because when I think of ethereal, I should just let you explain it. But when I think of it, it's kind of just like the. Well, like you said, reflections. You have to take what happened in the mm-hmm. physical, and then there's an important element of being human, which is internal. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. more, it's ethereal.
Yeah.
It's in your head. It's ideas.
Yeah, right. And it's the dream time that comes afterward that allows you to learn those lessons. It's the little bits of belief and faith that you're giving in that one moment is going to contribute to something in the future.
I like the celebration too.
Yeah, 100%. It comes into that. Feeling the joy of our good works.
Yeah.
And knowing that it's good works.
Celebration really helps anchor, I guess, intentions or processes or anything into mm-hmm. a memory.
Rites of passage. It's rites of passage, really. Mm-hmm. You know, and celebration has, I think, in the modern context, has been one, commercialized, and two, become entertainment as something to happen.
Something
to happen in between the drudgery of daily life that isn't necessarily focusing on the good works that you've done and celebrating those good works and then having that uplift. It's more of shedding all of that and forgetting that you were doing any of that. You know, so the celebration in modern society in a lot of ways has become disconnected from that.
I was referring to celebration with friends and family. Well,
that's what I'm saying. So we bring back the intentionality of that celebration.
We create it. Yeah.
It's intentional. So that brings it back to the individual and the connection to the ethereal.
Well, right? to your point, yeah. This was an important thing for me the last few years with a different project. But until like Hollywood came around in the 20s, 30s, 40s, like people celebrated together. Mm-hmm. There weren't pop songs. Mm-hmm. Everyone mm-hmm. knew the same songs.
Yeah.
And you would sing them together.
Kind of cappella.
And then it became like, no, buy the movie ticket. Mm-hmm. Watch the movie. So have a centerpiece.
Come see the performer.
Yeah.
And then idolization of those people and then putting it out of the hands of the normal people. You know, and it's part of the disempowerment. It's part of that whole process of letting people enslave themselves, whether it's a conscious process or just the domestication that happens. Because I think we are domesticated creatures. We've domesticated the natural world and we've domesticated ourselves and we're on the path to greater domestication. I stay feral as much as possible.
Claim your sovereignty, brother.
You know, that's part of it. You know, that's why being in the garden is that being feral, you know, going back to nature.
Yeah.
That's what feral means. Feral doesn't mean you're wild. It means you're once domesticated and you're working your way back into the wild or you are back in the wild. And I'm not fully feral. I don't want to be like that.
Oh, I thought feral could still be like, you're born out in the wild.
Well, theoretically, yes. If you came from a species that was domesticated once and then you were born in the wild. So cats, feral cats, right? Like you could have domesticated cats that get loose in the wild that
now
don't breed
feral.
In the wild.
Oh, gotcha.
Now they're feral.
God, that makes sense. Yeah.
Right. So they went from being domesticated back into the wild.
So we need to like make this a thing again, like get feral, make feral great again.
Yeah. To some degree. Like we don't need people shitting everywhere. You know, have them still use litter boxes and stuff like that. You know what I mean about that.
I think I like where we live, this region, because it's just feral enough.
That
people have a good degree of it, but no one's too feral.
Yeah. Well, there are.
I mean, maybe there are, but I don't.
But it's not the majority. We aren't getting the bell curve of too feral. I think, you know, having some of that is really important because that's how we reconnect to nature itself. Again, like I think being outside is part of that. You know, there's people that I know that just want to spend all their time inside and just shut in, air conditioned, looking at a screen. And to me, that's the ultimate disempowerment.
Mm-hmm.
That's just being dependent on everything else to give you that little safe environment.
Although I completely agree with you, though I will find myself craving that sometimes and just giving it to myself for a little bit. Cause like you said, that comfort, that safety.
We need a cave.
Just to feel it. And then once I'm in it for a bit, I'll go, what am I doing? Like this doesn't feel good to like watch a movie or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'll watch movies from before 1990 and then I'll like it's kind of like a cultural experience, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. but like watching a Netflix something, like, oh my gosh. But I feel like I crave that. I just want to lay down, be lazy, just watch a movie, shut off.
And sometimes that's all right, but it's like when it becomes the norm and the reg and that disconnection as the shut off,
and as opposed to being out in nature. That's the opposite of
that's
of
just that the habit, idea. The pattern.
Yeah, right. And it's that disconnection from the natural world. The more you go into that digital world, the more you become like the things that are plugged in the matrix, the humans that were plugged in the matrix and having all their life energy sucked by the machines.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that movie's about. Then they made a second one and a third one. And like, apparently people didn't get the notion that they were having their life energy and being sucked out by the machines, and they just kept plugging themselves in.
The machines
so that's what I mean
stronger.
About people being willing to be domesticated because it is comfortable. There's something beautiful in comfort. And I think actually that brings us to the healing of our traumas. So this is big. We talked about this last time too. We talked about our genetic ancestral. And our cultural ancestral traumas. So if we're carrying all those traumas, there needs to be space to heal. And if we as the individuals need to have that time and that space, that's a beautiful thing, but it has to be conscious. It can't just be
a
traumatic response of, you know, fetal positioning. And that's all we're doing.
Yeah. And it, you have to acknowledge, you have to do the work to heal it. Like you said, time and the space and the work. It's not
the
a pill.
The awareness. It's the awareness it's that you're doing the healing. And so then creating the new habits on top of that, the seeing the old patterns and loving them into transmutation.
And it requires a commitment. It requires work.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just like a sit back and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think
the garden is.
I always got stuck. That's why the garden is a great analogy and metaphor, especially like, oh, I'm watching my garden die. It's like reflecting something in me dying, and maybe not in a good way,
because
that garden represented the highest in me and my goals.
Mm-hmm. And you have to do the work to make it the highest. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you have to let it be fallow and say, we're not going to do that right now.
Right.
And sometimes you open it up and you put all that work and you get the product out of there. And that comes to time also, because timing is everything. Going back to that harvest notion, if you don't harvest within a small window of time, your crops are no good anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And what's amazing about money to me is actually money has taken this thing, which is the energy that we harvest from the world, the food that we get that makes an individual able to move and do things. And it takes that moment in time that food is valuable, those moments in time that food is valuable to the individual to get nourishment. And it takes it and puts it in a form that we believe the value is suspended. And it's this whole belief system that comes from that basis of something really real. Because I really believe that food is the pure basis for economy. Because without food, you can't have people. Without clean water, you can't have people. There's no people to do the work. And if it's machines, if you finally get to the place where the machines are all doing the work, then you could say, okay, the energy the machines are able to extrapolate from the environment is also a basis for economy. We have based our economy on that with oil.
Mm.
But it's really, it should be a food-based economy. And the United States kind of has, right, with the commodification of food. But then that's a whole other thing, because it's not a realistic food-based economy. It's a food-based economy based on overproduction and displacing nature.
So you're writing a book about all this?
It's in the process. This is one of the first steps in that process, as working through these thoughts and capturing them.
All right. So how can people stay in touch to find out when this book is available?
Well, you can find me through Jordan.
ScottLayback.com. Sign up for Scott's newsletter.
You can find me on Facebook. Sound? Why don't you hit Facebook. Me on Facebook? And Stoked on Sustainable on Instagram.
Oh, you're still doing Stoked on Sustainable?
On Instagram. My website is...
My
website is fallow.
Have you thought about doing a newsletter?
It's too much time out of my brain right now for me to have the regularity, but maybe if you help coach me in doing the regular thing. See, this is where it comes back to the community. What I find in my kind of feeling unanchored lately is I'm on the edge of my belief system of how sustainable we should be and how we should be rooting into the earth. And I don't find myself as surrounded by people that are doing that. In a lot of ways. And I have in the past, and it's not necessarily anybody's fault. And it's kind of, I put myself in this position partly because I think that I need to be there to represent that other piece. But if it's not necessarily there directly around me, supporting me and doing that, no man is an island.
Right.
You know, so you can only go so far on your own. And so I am calling in support for this, you know, because I spend a lot of time in that garden, all the gardens that I tend to, specifically tending to the gardens, you know, and that's where I put that energy.
I feel like we're all capable of making a beacon of light for our message to the world. And it's going to get easier, but this is it. This is like the age of doing that. And like you can surround you. I know you're not into the digital connections as much as the real life ones, but you can start attracting those people into your space, your sphere. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to have random calls with random people once a week that I connect with on Twitter.
See, that seems so like not having the people there to me. This is the interesting thing, because I know a lot of people talk about digital connection, but I'm talking about people that come and cook dinner with me on a regular basis harvest the food from the land and are working in the garden with me on a regular basis. And, you know, even my community, we do a little of that, but everybody's just running around so much. There's so much just whirling of that. And so that's really what I'm talking about calling in. So,
yeah, I know. I get it.
To me, that other connection, it's important, but it.
Well, listen to where I'm getting.
Okay. I should listen to
all these people you connect with online. Doesn't mean they're not open to relocating. It doesn't mean that these people are stuck somewhere and they're going to stay there, or you. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of developing these networks, these global networks. That reality can change like this, man. Like everything is possible. And I've been using the internet since I was 12, making friends. I've done all. You followed me for a while on my. You've seen what I do with the videos.
Yeah, like, man. You've been.
I'm really into community building digitally. That's just something I've just done a long time. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I mean, there's no space in my life with the kids and everything to do what you're talking about, like having dinner every night with the community and this and that. And I don't have space to create that. I crave it, but we're not doing that right now. We're doing the family thing. And I like that. And it's cool. I'm doing the starting a business thing. I'm doing a podcast thing. Doesn't mean my goals are not that. Mm-hmm. And I started this podcast so I could start being with people more. Day to day. I think we talked about it in the first episode. I want to hang out, but if I don't feel like I'm creating something towards my goals,
This is exactly what I'm saying. And so for me, like my goals are really rooted in this place and the land itself. I feel like until the land is as productive as it can be, and we're as connected to that land as we can be, I'm not looking to go outward. Hmm.
Have you experienced that before here?
Of myself, like
the land being as productive as it can be, or is that just the goal?
I've experienced it getting pretty close, and I've seen some communities that really do that. Yeah, and it's always a blip in time.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, a bell curve kind
it's
of.
It's ebbing and flowing. There's tides. Mm-hmm. The tides change, and the tides are really related to humans. You know, the human tides. Mm-hmm. And that said, like that's what feels kind of right to me, is that I like think local,
be local.
Think global, think global, act locally.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and just be local. Yeah. And so, I mean, I am open to going and doing good things out in the rest of the world, but just like you're saying, I'm not traveling for the sake of traveling by any means these days.
No more.
You know, I travel if there's something good to do, and then I'll enjoy the place. I'll add on 2 days to go see it, or, you know, 5 days or whatever, and have a little bit of a tourist experience, you know, but I'm not doing that anymore. It's about purpose in those places. And so right here, I do find my purpose. This is the place where I think I find my most purpose. And so I am, but just even by saying this to you and having this discussion, inviting you to come to our Sunday jam, this is the representation of how we build that community piece. And just because I say, you know, I'm struggling with it not being there, doesn't mean that it's not somewhat there, you know? And so this is one of the gardens that I'm tending to. So if I go away from that garden, if I take my energy away from that garden, I don't get to grow that garden, the human garden, those relationships. And that's kind of where I get to with being like, I'm not necessarily in a place to have time to do that. But I think what would be great, actually, is if you help me just checking in with me regularly around this book in particularly, and then doing regular check-ins.
Here's why I think a newsletter suits you. Why are you doing a book?
I don't know. I mean, what news do I have to have? Like, I don't actually have news.
Don't call it a newsletter. Call it a letter then. An email letter.
Yeah. It's kind of a blog.
It's the same intention.
It's just a blog.
It's the same intention. Blog. And by doing something just weekly or biweekly or once a month, just being consistent about it, you're putting that energy towards the book. Stuff you could reuse for the book.
I like that.
You can repurpose all of it.
Yeah.
But the point is you got to start getting consistent with it. That's how you build an audience to read your book.
And that's exactly how gardens grow. It's the consistency, right? And this goes back to the individual, because right now I'm showing my individual resistance to this notion. I'm like, man, that doesn't really fit in my lifestyle. Like, yeah, I got some things that I need to get in order to make that a thing.
Yeah, man, I had to fight through so much resistance in the beginning here. Like the beginning when we first got back, like 6 months ago, and then even when we just moved in, like I had big ambitions. I think you came and took a little tour around the lot. And we were talking. In the beginning, I was like, we got to do everything. I was like, blah, 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 we got. Mm-hmm. And then I was fighting. I was stressing out. I was like putting way too much responsibility just to watch it slowly just get overrun with weeds. I can't handle that. Can't handle that until I just drop enough to where, okay, this is what I can handle. This is what's happening now. Mm-hmm. But how do you learn humility without just having to go through it?
Right up to the edge, right? And I think that, I've learned some humility that's just given me the idea that every once in a while coming out and talking to a friend like you is a good step in that direction. And
you have so much to share, Scott.
I appreciate that.
I mean, I'm going to check to see if anyone commented something on our Facebook
stream. I was actually
just
wondering that. I'm like, what do the people think about all this that we're talking about?
Oh, cool. Can barely hear him. Maybe adjust his mic. And then we got an emoji. So I guess we did adjust the mic. Love listening in. I've always found you to be very interesting in a good way. Miss you, your whole family, your kiddos. Okay, thank you, Shiloh. Good to hear from you. All right, well, nothing about our conversation.
All right.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Thanks, Scott. I didn't introduce our sponsor because I'm going to put it into the podcast episode, but you would really like it. It's Copy Vine Lozenges from Big Island, organically grown.
Cool.
And so they're just microdosing lozenges. Copy Vine comes from a mystic brew in the Amazon. Maybe people have heard of it, but we don't say it during the sponsorship read. It's hard to explain, but it kind of creates like this space, this patience, this space, like between, you know, like the stimulus and the response or the reaction, like the trigger. You know how like, I think this is where we talk about like your personal sovereignty is the space to choose. Do I react? Do I respond? Like that's you, right? That's where you really take it. And I feel like the Copy Vine, especially on these microdoses, it really expands that space. Similar to when you're doing a ceremony where, you know, a lot's happening in that space, but it stretches that time-space continuum as we were talking about earlier. CopyHawaii.com. You can check that out if you're interested. Really, really powerful stuff. Thanks, Scott.